Welcome to UEG Podcast, where we talk about scientific discoveries, educational insights, and professional development within the world of digestive health. Whether you're a clinician, researcher, or just passionate about GI content, this is the podcast for you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agla, and I'm the host of UEG Podcast, educational and hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We're very happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. So today we're talking about low anterior resection syndrome, or LARS for short, which affects a large proportion of patients after rectal cancer surgery, yet it often goes underrecognized and undertreated. In this episode on the consequences of proctology surgery, we're bringing you a roundtable discussion that digs into the practical questions clinicians face. Who follows up these patients? When should transanal irrigation come in and where are its limits? What's the role of the gastroenterologist? And when is it time to escalate the treatment? During the discussion is Harold Rawson, joined by Peter Christensen, Andreas Ring, and Franco Marinello, four experts who bring surgical, multidisciplinary, and real-world clinical perspectives to the table. If this episode leaves you wanting more, the full course is waiting for you on gutflix.eu. And there's a link in the show notes. Case discussions, complete treatment pyramid, and the evidence behind it, all free to access. Now, let's join the conversation.
Hello, and welcome to our course about low anterior resection syndrome, or LARS. Today, I will be delighted to have an expert faculty dealing with this interesting and demanding topic. My name is Harold Rosen. I'm professor of surgery at the Sigmund Freud University, and I'm involved in coloproctology and mainly focusing on sphincter restoration and fecal incontinence problems since many years. I'm extremely happy today to present you our expert faculty, and we will start with Andreas, please.
Yes, hello. My name is Andreas Rink. I am from Essen University Hospital in Germany. I'm a GI and colorectal surgery and professor for minimally invasive oncologic surgery. And I'm mainly interested, of course, in minimally invasive surgery and in everything that has to do with rectal replacement functionally and technically.
Thank you for being with us. Peter, please.
My name is Peter Christensen. I'm a professor in colorectal surgery at Aarhus University Hospital, Denmark. My main focus in research is pelvic floor surgery and rehabilitation following cancer treatment. I heads up the Danish Cancer Society National Research Center for late sequelae, and among these topics, we research in low anterior resection syndrome.
Thank you for coming, Peter. Franco.
Hello, everyone. My name is Franco Marinello. I'm a colorectal surgeon based at the University Hospital of Vall d'Hebron in Barcelona. And I basically treat patients with bowel dysfunction and pelvic floor disorders, among them low anterior resection syndrome. And my main focus in research is how can I help these patients with neuromodulation.
Thank you, everyone, for being with us for this roundtable discussion following our course. We will try in the following minutes to go into more depth of some remaining questions which partially came up to me by watching your presentation. And the first one is Franco, whom I want to address to. Franco, does every patient with LARS need immediately treatment?
Well, that's a great question, Harold, because as I stated, the LARS score is a very good screening tool, but we have to keep in mind that patients with LARS score might not have repercussion in their daily life activities, and patients with minor LARS could have a lot of repercussion. So we have to base our decision on the quality of life of the patient, their daily life symptoms, and also their age and their occupation and their assessment of their whole life, not an immediate treatment for everyone.
So it seems to be a very individual patient-to-patient decision.
Exactly. The most important thing is that the patient has to know what LARS is, how it impacts their quality of life, and that we can treat them, that there are options that we can be, that we can give them. And after that, we can start assessing the patient and treating.
So that brings up to me the question which I would like to ask every one of you is, who is seeing your patients following surgery in order to make, together with them, the decision to go for a treatment?
Well, at my institution, it's me, okay? But also our stoma nurses who had the patient before the ileostomy closure also sees the patient and start all the counseling and initial interventions in case they have symptoms.
Peter?
At my institution, it is definitely the best choice to go to the nurses first because they have time and dedication to do this job. They are more patient than I am, more patient than my correctional colleagues are. And they can take the time to, with empathy, go into the patient's situation, set patient's expectations with them, and also start this educational process with them, because the patients need to understand what is going on before they can do some changes in their lives. Mm-hmm. And but to do this, and to have our nurses to do this, you need to delegate the responsibility to them. And you also need to back them up so they are not on their own. So every time they face a hard decision with the patients, they can always consult back to the physicians. And this is an important way that you should delegate, but you should be there for them.
Okay. Andreas?
So I try to keep in contact with all the patients that I did surgery on. Mm-hmm. But I know that we definitely have the problem in Germany that many patients are lost because the centers where they do the surgery, they are often not allowed to take care of the patients for a longer period. And then many patients are lost. They go to their primary care colleagues and they don't know a lot about LAS and about the treatment option. And so my major aim is to inform the patients. This is exactly what Franco said. They need to know that we can offer them therapy if they have this symptom. So I try to have the patients in contact and they know they can contact me whenever they need help.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I have a similar observation like you in Austria that sometimes people who have been perfectly operated technically.
Of course.
Technically, excellently been operated, they drop out of follow-up. Yeah. And so the last problem gets completely lost. And I think this is a big dilemma in this, which we have to overcome, hopefully, with courses like this.
Yeah.
So watching and listening to your presentations, I really had the impression that transanal irrigation is a major player in the treatment of LAS. I would like to ask you one by one, what are your experiences in terms of how do you use it? Which pitfalls and problems do you see with this method? And where is still a way to go until we have the full picture? We do it one by one. Franco, please start.
Well, yeah, definitely transanal irrigation has been a game changer for these patients. And transanal irrigation was born for neurogenic problems, and we translated those results into our patients. And one of the biggest pitfalls or disadvantages that I see that some patients are not comfortable doing the therapy. The idea of getting a catheter into the anal canal and then flushing the colon is not a very seductive option for them. But still, with counseling and explaining the patient and setting the expectations, I think that we can manage to help a lot of patients with this technique.
Okay. Peter?
But on the other hand, this treatment actually allows patients to regain control over their lives and over their bowels. Many LAS patients experience that their bowel has taken control over their lives. They cannot live a social life. They cannot go to work, they need to bring back control into their lives. And with the therapy, when it works, actually you can decide when to go to the toilet and not being afraid that you will experience an accident. Of course, this is not a treatment for all, but you need to adapt that you should do this every day or every second day or in the way you want to. And you need to continue to do so, because this is not something, if you stop using it, then you'll go back to a bad situation. One of the things we stress a lot is that you choose, you are taught the treatment, so this is not an over-the-counter thing for last patients. This is something that needs instruction and needs adaption. So you always need to decide the right volume, the right type of catheter. Should you use a balloon catheter? Should you use a cone-shaped catheter? There are different pros and cons for both. But in an individualized treatment pathway for and with support from the treating nurses are very important when you use transanal ligation for last patients.
Thank you. Andreas?
Yes, I also agree that irrigation is the major player in the armamentarium that we have for the treatment of LARS, and this is why I talk to the patients the first time with pre-operative counseling and say there might be the necessity to do this. And if somebody says, no way, there's no chance, no way that I do transanal irrigation, and if the patient is at high risk of developing LARS, I really talk about them, maybe a stoma is the better alternative. So it has a very early position when I talk to the patients, but then I do stoma closure first, and then I see if the patient develops LARS before I offer LARS. So I do not do it immediately after stoma closure, but also some colleagues, I think you do it in many cases.
Yeah. I agree with you that the preoperative information about the possibility is so important. And I always say to the patient, because the other concern is immediately, as you know, when they come to you, they say, will I have a stoma? And then I can always say, 99% you will not need a stoma, but there might be a price to pay for that. And this is that you will need transanal irrigation for a certain time or maybe forever. We have seen this nice treatment pyramid, which really reflects the options and the time point when which treatment should be involved into the management. And what comes up to me is, and this is a question to you, Peter, is when, at what time point is the gastroenterologist or should the gastroenterologist be involved in the management of LARS patients?
So in our setting, we involve the gastroenterologist in two specific settings. If we have a diarrhea-dominant LARS patient, we need to find the cause of the diarrhea and then treat the cause. Because if you don't treat that cause, you will never succeed with any other treatment that will be transanal ligation, sacral nerve modulation, or anything else. You need to treat the cause of the diarrhea, and the gastroenterologist help us doing this. We could upfront predict who would be likely to have these diagnoses, and these are the patients with radiotherapy, very frequent defecations, and also Bristol stool type 6+7. I would advise that you have your gastroenterologist on board for those patients.
Thank you very much. When I look further at the pyramid, Franco, of course, neuromodulation, as we know, is the major player in fecal incontinence. Where do you, from your experience and your data, really see the role of neuromodulation procedures in LARS?
That's also a very good question that we're trying to find out, because one of the things that we do not have clear is when to implement a treatment. When should the patient start transanal irrigation? When should I escalate the patient to neuromodulation? Those are things that we haven't resolved yet. So to answer to your question, I think that neuromodulation can be tried, of course, after exhausting conservative treatment, after trying to reduce or control the diarrhea, after setting patient expectations. But I think that we need to start focusing on treating patterns of symptoms. And I do think that those patients with fecal urgency or fecal incontinence, that storage pattern that I was talking about, are or might be better candidates to make a sacral neuromodulation or to do neuromodulation. Still, other patients are suitable to try it, of course, but always in a very adjusted expectation setting.
Thank you very much. So when we conclude the therapeutic options and open questions, and since we are getting close to Christmas, every one of you has now a wish free for one study or trial he would like to have in order to answer an open question. And I will start with myself, and I would say I would love to have a randomized trial comparing low volume transanal irrigation versus high volume irrigation in order to see the outcome in terms of quality of life and of last treatment. So what is your wish for Christmas in terms of the trial?
This is probably a randomized trial on presacral omental flap interposition, because the data that this Chinese group that I showed is so impressive, but it's only one group and it's non-randomized. So maybe it's nothing, but if it's only 50% of what they have shown, it is really a great potential effect. So that would be a great study.
Thank you. Peter.
So the beauty of being part of a family like this is that you get presents. If family members get a present, I also get some presents. So I would, of course, love those trials to be done. But my favorite trial is a bit more ambitious, I think. I really want to be more able to phenotype last patients on the basis of symptoms and on pathophysiology, to be able to design the best treatment options for each phenotype. And this still needs some small trials, medium-sized trials of different, and also in collaboration before we are there.
Okay, let's see if Santa Claus has it in a reindeer carriage for you. Franco, you're...
So Santa came earlier, but yeah. I am starting a trial because I think that following Peter's suggestion, not only will we have to start focusing on patterns or phenotypes of large patients, but also timing. When should we start the treatment itself? So we will start at our institution, a trial implementing early neuromodulation implantation to see how these patients go after conservative measures fail. Because I do believe that this pyramid that we see here, it's very important to standardize preoperative counseling and conservative measures and getting on board the gastroenterologists to treat those patients with diarrhea. But then I think the last part of this pyramid should be really dynamic and not one-step approach. So I think that we should start focusing on that, and since LARS is so complex.
Thank you very much for all of you for being with us today, for your time and your effort for this great cause, and also your input in this online discussion. So I would like to conclude this and hope that everyone has enjoyed our course. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to UEG Podcast. We hope you found some new ideas, insights, and inspiration to take with you. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you like our content, please leave us a review and share our podcast with your colleagues.